Governor Tony Evers vetoed several bills that would have prevented Wisconsin communities from banning the use of energy, vehicles, or appliances powered by fossil fuels. It's Monday, August 7th. This is Wisconsin Today. Good morning. I'm Alex Crow. Coming up, the new liberal state Supreme Court is sparking controversy after the firing of the state court director. And Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban went back into effect last June when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. In WPR's newest series, reporters explore how the ban came to be and how Wisconsinites have lived with and without it since. Stay with us.
Thank you to the donors who make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. There are more than 50,000 of you. Your generosity delivers essential news, thought-provoking conversations, and inspiring music to listeners all over Wisconsin and beyond. Your support makes a difference in people's lives every day. Thank you.
Governor Tony Evers vetoed several bills Friday that would have prevented Wisconsin communities from barring the use of energy, vehicles, or appliances powered by fossil fuels. Danielle Kading has more.
GOP lawmakers and supporters have said the proposals aim to protect consumer choice, but Jennifer Gietrich with Wisconsin Conservation Voters says the bills would have made it harder for the state to address climate change.
The legislature was putting forward three bills that would have locked local governments into fossil fuel use into the future, and that has a dramatic impact on public health.
Republican lawmakers have said they wanted to stop Wisconsin from following states like California that plan to ban gas-powered vehicles or appliances, but Wisconsin hasn't proposed any such ban. However, the governor's clean energy plan does call for incentives to buy electric appliances, and it supports expansion of the state's electric vehicle infrastructure. Evers has also set a goal for the state to use carbon-free electricity by 2050. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Governor Tony Evers is also calling for Wisconsin's fake electors to be, quote, held accountable for casting fake electoral votes for Donald Trump. 10 Wisconsinites cast false electoral votes for Trump after Joe Biden's victory in the state. Republicans in six other swing states took similar actions. That plan is a key component in the federal indictment of Trump for trying to overturn the results of the 2020 election. In a tweet Friday, Evers said what the fake electors did was wrong. He wrote, quote, people have to be held accountable for that, and I hope to hell somebody does, end quote. Attorney General Josh Call last week said he could not comment on whether his office was considering charges.
We generally don't confirm or deny the existence of investigations, and we're sticking with that.
Former Republican Party Chair Andrew Hitt said the group was following guidance of attorneys to preserve a legal strategy for the state. The new liberal majority of the Wisconsin Supreme Court has been in place for less than a week, but Corinne Hess reports there is continued controversy surrounding the state court system director.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu say the liberal justice's appointment of a Milwaukee judge to the position is unconstitutional and should be rescinded. In a letter sent to the liberal justices, Voss and LeMahieu say Wisconsinites should be, quote, troubled by the blatant disregard for the Constitution and the rule of law. Judge Audrey Skorowski would replace Randy Koshnick, who was fired on August 2nd, but Voss and LeMahieu allege the state constitution prohibits a judge from holding another public office until their term expires. Skorowski's term expires July of 2025. Corinne Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
One of the buildings at the former UW-Platteville College and Richland Center has been sold to a local school district. Richland County Board Chair Marty Brewer says what was once known as East Hall could be the site of a charter school overseen by the Richland School District. District officials did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Richland County owns the buildings and land at what was once known as UW-Richland. Brewer says negotiations over a 75-year lease with the UW system are ongoing.
It's kind of one of these waiting for the other guy to blink here. I would like to see us get out of the agreement so we could decide what we want to do with the buildings, with the campus.
Last fall, UW System President Jay Rothman ordered the college to essentially close after enrollment fell to just 60 students. Coming up, we'll have the first of WPR's newest series called How We Got Here, Abortion in Wisconsin Since 1849. It will look into Wisconsin's abortion ban. Stay with us.
If you've never given before, but you look forward to listening to WPR every day, that's a sign it's time to donate. It means that WPR is important to you, and you are important to us. We're listener-supported radio, which means we count on money from people like you to make the programs possible. Make your first ever contribution today at WPR.org. Thank you.
And finally, a challenge to Wisconsin's abortion ban could already be making its way to the state Supreme Court. The law was first passed in 1849 and went back into effect last June when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. In our series, How We Got Here, Abortion in Wisconsin Since 1849, WPR reporters explore how the ban came to be and how Wisconsinites have lived with and without it since.
Just over a year ago, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that states could regulate abortion as they saw fit, the way they had done before the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973. Wisconsin law has banned nearly all abortions for a long time.
1849.
The 1849 ban.
That 1849 ban on abortion.
The 1849 law.
1849.
The Supreme Court's decision put that 19th century state law back into effect. Since then, we've heard a lot about the effects of that law, how it's brought legal abortion in Wisconsin to a halt, and how it's played a big role in the last few elections. We've also heard a lot about efforts to challenge the Wisconsin abortion law in court. What we haven't heard much about is the 1849 law itself and how it first came to be. Here to tell us more about that is WPR's Bridget Bowden and Evan Casey. This law is almost as old as the state of Wisconsin, correct?
Yeah, so just 1 year after Wisconsin became a state, abortion was banned. And a version of that ban actually stayed on the books for the last 174 years or so. So when Roe v. Wade was overturned, it went back into effect.
Bridget, what did abortion look like in Wisconsin in the 1840s?
Yeah, so we know that abortion was happening at this time. Abortions were being done by so-called abortionists or by doctors, and also just at home by regular people. Home medical journals sometimes had instructions for ending a pregnancy or what they would call restoring the menses. Here's what UW-Green Bay history professor Kimberly Riley told us about it.
So people would use combinations of, you know, tansy or rue or quinine or even castor oil. And in the right combination and at the right strength, there are these sort of herbal remedies that can induce contractions that can bring on effectively like a miscarriage.
And Riley said it wasn't always spelled out in clear language, like this will end your pregnancy. It was more of a wink, wink.
It remedies the most serious form of female complaint. It is. It allows you to expel in an early stage a tumor from the womb. And so everybody would know what you meant by, well, you know, what was meant by tumor.
And keep in mind that a woman who became pregnant at this time couldn't get a pregnancy test. You know, there was no way to prove that the reason she wasn't getting her period was because she was pregnant until she started to feel fetal movements or baby kicks. And that was known as quickening. And it's a really important part of this history.
How so?
So quickening, or those baby kicks, are something that pregnant women usually begin to feel in the second trimester. And actually, when Wisconsin first banned abortion in 1849, it was only illegal after quickening.
The original law made the willful killing of what was called an unborn quick child manslaughter in the first degree. So under that original ban, abortion was actually legal in the first few months of pregnancy. And historian Kimberly Riley says this is really notable, especially now post-Roe.
I was immediately struck by the irony, the deep irony, that in 1849, you know, people who were pregnant had more rights to terminate a pregnancy than they do today.
What was the public attitude about abortion at the time? Was this a hot button issue in the 1840s like it is today?
Actually, no, it wasn't. Historians say that it's actually hard to fathom the attitude towards the issue at the time because it is so different than what it is today. Historian James Moore wrote the book Abortion in America, which chronicles abortion history in the 19th century. And he says because early pregnancy was so different than what it is today, the attitude towards abortion in general may have also been different.
19th century people probably thought of contraception as going right through quickening. That is, it was almost a form of birth control to that point.
He also says that this movement to make those laws wasn't a moral movement and it wasn't a religious movement, the way that many people think of it today.
It's almost impossible for Americans today to think of abortion as an issue that was not tied to religion. But in the 19th century, it was not tied very closely anyway to religion. That is, it was a medical question. It was not a religious or a moral question.
So if it's not a moral or a religious question in this time, why was abortion banned in 1849?
So Moore says it was part of a national movement to professionalize medicine that was happening at the time. The American Medical Association was new, and they wanted to crack down on other people performing abortions. So this is when you start to see a lot of anti-abortion laws popping up across the nation.
These were not public campaigns. They were campaigns conducted by elite physicians who had the ear of legislatures and were able to suggest that this was necessary legislation.
And other states around the country, including Michigan, New Hampshire, Vermont, New York, and Massachusetts, were also passing similar abortion laws around this time. Today, a lot of lawmakers rely on something called model legislation, and that's kind of what was happening in this case. Wisconsin appeared to be borrowing from other states that were passing abortion restrictions at this same time.
And is the 1849 law what's in place now in Wisconsin?
Actually, no, not quite. In 1858, the word quick was removed from the ban, and abortion became illegal at any time in pregnancy. And that's the version of the ban that we have now.
All right. What prompted that change in 1858?
So this is where we want to introduce you to a guy named William Henry Brisbane, who's a really key figure in this part of the history. He was a pastor and a physician who was born in South Carolina and eventually settled in Orena, Wisconsin. Brisbane was an abolitionist, and he was also opposed to abortion. He served as the clerk of the state Senate, which is like a secretary. They helped with drafting legislation and making suggestions to lawmakers.
And Bridget and I went and looked at his writings in the archives of the State Historical Society, and we didn't find anything about abortion. UW-Madison doctoral student Bridget Nannenhorn, who was researching the state's abortion history, says she couldn't find him discussing abortion either.
In his diaries, he talks about anti-slavery. He talks about temperance. He talks about gambling. He does not mention abortion. He does not mention miscarriage, infanticide, any word that, you know, would think, okay, here he's talking about it.
We do know that he was corresponding with a national leader in the anti-abortion movement at the time. So we know from these letters that Brisbane claims the credit for taking the word quick out of the law and turning it into the abortion ban that we have today.
But why he wanted to do that appears to still be an open question.
Yeah, so his motivation isn't super clear. On the one hand, he was a pastor and a very religious person. But on the other hand, as far as we know, he actually never wrote about religion being a motivating factor here. What we do know about the national movement at this time is that historians say activists are talking about abortion becoming more commonplace, especially among middle-class white women. They had concerns about poorer, non-white women driving population growth.
So the one thing that's the same today is the letter of the state law from the mid-19th century, but what's around that law is very different.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Bridget and Evan, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Hear more of WPR's series, How We Got Here, at WPR.org. And that'll do it. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producers today were Mallory Chang and John Davis. As always, you can catch us every weekday morning wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a rating and review. Have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.